Thin Digital Line, policing in the year 2045.
Hello, I'm Jason Harwin and welcome to the final episode of Thin Digital Line. In today's episode, I'm delighted to be joined again by, firstly, Chief Constable Gavin Stevens, QPM, who's the National Police Chiefs Council Chair. Welcome back, Gavin.
Thank you very much.
Secondly, Alan Anderson, Executive Director from the award-winning digital transformation company Exception. Welcome back, Alan.
Hello, Jason. Hi.
And finally, but not least, Tony Blaker, former Deputy Chief Constable and now the Chief of Staff for the MPCC Lead for Digital Data and Technology. Welcome back, Tony.
Thanks, Jason.
In today's episode, we'll be exploring some of the key themes that have arisen during this series and discussing how policing is organising itself as it moves towards 2045. So let's get started. Bit of a broad question first, Gavin. How is policing organising itself to ensure it is fit for the challenges now, but towards the future?
Oh, well, the first thing we're doing is looking back in history. So the current structure of policing was designed in the early 1960s, only 15 years after the end of the Second World War. So there is a real appetite now amongst leaders across policing, not just in National Police Chiefs Council, but our other big national agencies, to look at fresh at what the structures are in policing, what are the services that should be delivered at the national, regional and local level. And a key part of that is that for us to keep pace with criminality, to keep pace with being able to keep communities safe, we need to act in a more coherent way, to act collectively together. Practically, we've got a Science and Innovation Committee now who's tasked with looking ahead into the future. There's some really great work coming through that, which I know you've featured on earlier episodes, so do listen back if you haven't already.
Thank you.
The other aspect of it, as well as thinking about the, you know, the big structures of policing and how we do the internal mechanics, is making sure that we continue to have the conversations with our local communities that we want to be in this together. This is not about some big surveillance state or scary technology. This is about making the best of what's available to make sure that they're kept safe in a way that they would want to be kept safe.
So clearly you talk about reform there, particularly, Gavin. I know that's been discussed many years ago, wasn't it? And obviously by the sounds of it, appetite to do that is now. For listeners, give us a sort of things you're thinking about, the conversation, how that's going.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are some big drivers for reform, not least the economic ones. I mean, you know, I mentioned the current structure is old, but there are lots of constituent parts to it. And if each of those constituent parts are trying to solve the really big problems that we've talked about during this podcast, there's just so much duplication to it. So designing the future once for everybody in a way that makes sense will definitely help. We also know that there are some services, whether that's criminal investigations on, say, fraud or cyber, you know, tackling serious and organised crime or counter-terrorism, that, you know, nobody expects to be done at the very local level anymore. And increasingly in the world that we live in, some of the skills that we need, which I know you talked about in the sort of workforce episode, we can't all do that many, many times over. You know, so structures is important. But also things like decision making. You know, the world is moving so fast that not everybody can have a say in what it looks like. Getting really clear accountability, who's responsible for what, who can make a decision at the national level, what should the local coordination be? All of that needs to be thought through again because, like I say, it's nearly 60 years old how we're currently organised.
And like you say, I think there's some learning from the recent disorders across the country, isn't there, about decision making?
I mean, that's a really great example because if you look at the disorder, you had people walking out of their front door and around the corner to join in acts of violence. You had people that were driving across county, maybe incited by something that they'd seen or read online. And some of that online content was generated internationally, some of it not by real people but by bots. All of that had real world effect on the streets of Cleveland and Staffordshire and South Yorkshire. So I remember doing a piece at the end of that which said, you know, these developments, they're not abstract, they're not sort of mythical ideas, this is sort of real world effects of what is happening with our global communications and the way technology is changing the nature of crime.
And importantly, as we said about technology, data, and obviously certainly around digital, the importance of making sure we're match fit to address those issues, not now and not just now, but in the future as well. Tony, do you want to give listeners a bit of a view about what's happening around that space?
Certainly, Jason. So it's not right to say that we're standing still. So there's a lot of work being done, particularly with our partners at Home Office and at the Police Digital Service and in local forces, working with suppliers to adapt to new technologies, to modernise existing capabilities. But interestingly, we've just had the coordinating committee sit today. where the kind of policing leaders around digital data and technology have discussed the future. What does reform mean for the things that we look after for policing, the enabling services of digital data and technology? And a kind of key theme saying is, well, we are where we are because our technology, our IT, was built in a time when you built an application, you coded an application to digitize a business process. And we have a number of these kind of siloed applications that have grown over time. And you get this laminating effect where every year we add another layer to the pile of live services. And we're getting to a point now where we've got so many legacy live services running that kind of are expensive to maintain, that are kind of end of life. They hold huge amounts of data that we can't properly exploit because they're not interconnected. They're not constructed and architected in a way that works with modern technology. So we've really got to think about how do we transition from what we're running on now, because we have to keep running, but we have to find a way of transitioning to a more modern way of using technology to exploit the data, because this is all about data.
Yeah.
The capabilities that we need to understand the world of policing, to make good decisions, to intervene where necessary to have the best effect and keep people safe, as Gavin says, to be legitimate and transparent in what we're doing, all that rests upon having the right data available at the right points with the right tooling that help people do their jobs. And at the moment, that's really hard work at times. So I think what we've got to do is we've got to sustain and improve the current services, and we've got to get the headroom to transition to a new way of working where we imagine things from the point of view of the public and the officer back through the data towards what the underlying technology is that's needed to do it. And it's a process of transformation, because with the advent of cloud, with the integration that's available between systems now, the interoperability that can be achieved through common standards, the tooling that can exploit large data sets and give you insight that wasn't available even 2 or 3 years ago, we've got to reimagine our DDAC capabilities from the point of view of what's possible now and going to be in the future. And it's not spending money on old siloed systems to keep them running, because they were appropriate 20, 30 years ago. And PNC is a good example. 50 years ago it was constructed. It's still running. The Law Enforcement Data Service, which is going live now and will replace PNC, is a modern architected system. And then you can do lots more with the data. So you can start reducing the number of systems you run and start using good quality, nationally held data to drive decision making. So I think we're in that bit where we need to transition to a new way of delivering it. I think 43 plus IT departments isn't sustainable going forward. It's not affordable. We can't keep it secure. We've got to move to a national IT system for policing. Doesn't mean you have to have one police force, but you can all use the same services.
Yeah, and we had this discussion amongst chiefs recently, and Tony talks about transition. I sometimes think about it as how can we leapfrog? Because I think what we heard from some chiefs is that they would rather take a bit of a risk on some of the existing technology if it allows them to leapfrog a generation or two ahead. And I think we need to find ways of doing that, because the pace of development is not going to slow down, is it? So how we let go of the old and leapfrog ahead to the new is, we're going to need help with that in policing.
And again, linked to that, I know Paul Taylor, the Chief Scientific Officer, has previously raised the concern around 80-90% of policing time around IT, wider technology and digital is focused on the here and now and not enough focus on the future. So that reinforces that bit about how do you leapfrog.
And we're making decisions now, such as creating a national data and analytics office, so that provides a consistent standard service across all of the forces. Forces start using a national service instead of doing that 43 times locally to different standards and different costs. So those sorts of things, having platforms upon which we can put analytical tools quickly and easily. So we're starting to put the infrastructure in place that will allow us to leapfrog, as Gavin says, because once you've got those basic components, you've got a strong network, you've got cloud platforms, you can quickly and easily put tools on, you can make that transitional jump. So we're in that kind of period of holding the fort, because you have to keep things running, but how do we get away from that preoccupation with what we've currently got? And Paul Taylor will talk about that kind of 70% on what you run now, 20% on building new stuff and 10% on innovation. How do we get that 30% really focused in on the things that when you release those new capabilities, you suddenly don't need the old stuff anymore? That's what you've got to do.
And I suppose the key bit from what you both said there is about that consensus for the need to change, reorganise it, the service, to make sure it is fit for the purpose, not just for today, but for tomorrow as well. So linked into that then, Alan, looking outside policing, what's happening in other sectors that's obviously organising itself in dealing with their challenges in the future as well?
So supporting the direction that Gavin started off with around where the technology, the IT department grew up from, in many cases, it's not evolved really from being a transactional service. So it's still spending its time running what's there just now. And what we see in commercial organisations is probably the introduction of CIOs and CDOs. They may not be dedicated, so full-time, and with Tony's point there around some shared service, again, that's a possibility. But they're starting to read product-led delivery and data-led modernisation. So actually working closer with the business and joining the business and IT together to solve the problems. And it's not just a IT's doing the transaction, it's actually how are we making things better? What are we using product managers for, service designers, software engineers? So it actually starts to change the whole organisational design, not just off, let's say, the traditional IT department, but how it actually operates within the realms of the company, the organisation, the force, or on a national level as well.
So I suppose one of the key questions, and you touched on it earlier on, Gavin, about the importance of staff and the public. Looking ahead, what are some of the aspirations, ambitions of policing, where things will improve for our staff, but just importantly for the public? Give us a view on that.
Well, I mean, my main hope is a consequence of all of this, that the human contact will increase. So where you really need face-to-face contact with an officer sitting with you on a difficult day in your kitchen, going through whatever's happened, that they'll have more time with you as a consequence of being better supported by technology, because a lot of the difficult time-consuming processes will be taken care of in the background. The second thing is that we get better results, that as a consequence of, as Tony's described, really exploiting the data, we'll be more easily able to identify the offender wherever they are in the world and find mechanisms either to bring them to justice or to interrupt or disrupt their offending. We'll better understand the risks to people and how to keep the most vulnerable safe in our society. And then from an officer's point of view, we've focused on data, but let's not forget things like, where material science is going, where our insight into recovery from trauma and therapies are heading, there's technology involved in all of that. So I hope that we have a healthier workforce that's better protected as well. I asked one of Paul Taylor, our chief scientific advisor's team, of all the things that you're working on, what's the thing that most excites you? And they talked about the smart uniform, the future of materials technology that can both protect people from trauma and ballistic effects, but also contains, smart materials for connectivity and, monitoring how they're coping physically and so on. All of that is really important to a sort of healthy workforce for the future. So done well, there's definitely something in this for everybody.
Yeah, and that's the important bit, isn't it? It's, again, in part of it. So, Tony, just going back slightly, in terms of the Police Digital Service, clearly they're a key part to play taking this forward. Just for listeners who may never have heard of the Police Digital Service, what's their role and how do you see that might change in the future?
So the Police Digital Service was initiated about 3.5 years ago. It came out of the Police ICT Company, and it's the additional delivery vehicle for national policing around digital data and technology capability. So what we have is we have platform capability there. We have design and standards held there. We have some national systems that are now being run from there, so technology to support and tackling violence against women and girls. So there's kind of new services that are being created and run by the Police Digital Service. We're in this period of transition where we're not quite clear what the future holds for what a national policing body might be, how that interacts with the Police Digital Service, our colleagues in Home Office that run our national systems for us. There's a piece of clarity that's going to emerge about saying, well, what's the national construct in it? Because some of the problem in delivering better technology and capabilities to staff and to make public safer are the complexity of the production system. We did a piece of work recently on prioritisation, and the insight from the consultants was you've got a number of sovereign entities in the system, different agencies that kind of have different parts to play, and actually joining up different agencies in a process is tricky. How do you make the money flow to the right place at the right time? How do you get the right decision making quickly and effectively? How do you get that kind of clarity? Everyone agrees what the priorities are and what the next steps are. So I think with reform, there's a real opportunity to say is how do we bring PDS and the Home Office and policing MPCC together into a kind of a more integrated capability around providing a national IT service effectively. Yeah. That means that operational officers and staff get the best capabilities. One of the key things we're interested in are the technology workforce. So if you want to have a police service that is digitally enabled, as Gavin describes, that has those experiences of good technology and safety and can give public safety the priority it needs with good outcomes, you need to recruit and retain skilled people who work in the sector, understand the sector. So one of our key working with Paul Taylor's office is saying is, how do we generate and sustain that technology workforce, working with partners, of course, in industry.
Which is a real challenge, isn't it? I know if you speak to any heads of IT around all the police force at the minute, retaining staff, again, the challenge of public service versus private sector pay, etc., is a real, real issue in keeping those in place. And a lot remain because of their public spirit and public service they want to deliver against. Taking account the wider workforce changes that would be required, not just now, for in the future, I'm particularly focused on leaders. So again, I was a previous deputy. The challenge around understanding this space, it comes very specialist. It'll switch some people on, it'll switch a lot of people off. What sort of work's taking place around there? What more needs to be done?
Well, again, interestingly, today we've just discussed a proposal that, so the Police Digital Service, working with the College of Policing, are looking at the skills requirement of leadership in around digital data and technology. So what does an information asset owner need to do? What does a senior responsible owner need to do? What does an information security officer in a force need to do? How do we develop those skills earlier in people's careers? So when they become a deputy and they're a senior information risk owner and they hold a lot of responsibility for people's data and the security of the technology systems, it's part of their DNA. And at the moment, people arrive in senior positions and by luck, they may have had some exposure to information assurance or technology. But generally, they will just arrive there and then there's a very, very steep learning curve. And that gives you a dependency on experts. So I think we need to grow the understanding in leadership roles before you get to the very senior ones so that people are familiar and comfortable with it. Yeah. Because a lot of it's around fear of the unknown. Because there's nothing in this world of digital data and technology that is beyond people's comprehension. They just need to have the time and the support and exposure to understand it.
And the key bit is that work starting now for the future as well, isn't it? So again, recognising we need to make sure people have got the skills, understanding and application of the things that we expect of leaders, whatever level of leadership that is in policing. But importantly, we've got to give that time and commitment to make sure they've got those skills at the same time.
And, I mean, as people in charge of data will say to us today, if you want to have good analytics, then you've got to get every officer to input quality data into the system at the front end. So it doesn't just sit with senior leaders, it permeates saying, so what's the culture? What's the culture which is the way that we use our technology, the way that we input data has consequences for the service and for the public. So we need to really focus in on approach to quality that permeates what we do.
Yeah, and some of that's going to be automated as well, isn't it? We were looking at a tool the other day that's effectively listening to the voice calls of domestic abuse callers, calling in, picking out the key aspects of it, making sure that it's already searching ahead, providing the call handler with relevant prompts and information. All of those sorts of tools in future will help us solve the quality problems. So some of the heavy lifting is going to be taken away from frontline colleagues.
And certainly on the workforce episode, we talked about the culture. Again, winning the culture now about understanding the importance of quality data, the impact that has on terms of decision making and better outcomes for victims. And let's be honest, identifying those that could be responsible for crime as well. So really, really important issue that about data quality. So Alan, just looking at the workforce outside policing, and again, some learning for policing and where other organisations are reorganising themselves around the workforce. Can you give us a flavour of what you know and see?
So I think it breaks down into three different areas. You have many product companies who are starting to use technology, obviously, to develop the product and sell them to policing, other companies that provide goods and services, and they're investing very heavily in that. You'll have organisations which use the technology, something like trading, ultra-high frequency trading. You'll also have drug companies who are using it and trying to exploit it to its fullest potential in order to run models as quickly as possible. And then you'll have the vast majority of businesses who are still trying to work out what they want to do with this, how they can use it, and how they can change their workforce for it, as you say, because essentially they're all kind of scrambling around thinking, oh, everyone's talking about at the moment AI and robotics, what should I be doing with it? They probably just need to dip their toe into it, to be honest, see what they can use, and for many people it won't actually affect them.
Yeah.
But for those that it will make life better in terms of removing a lot of the repetitive tasks. So you could take the example of contact centres, the police 999 or 101 or customer contact centres, where many of the agents now can get replaced by a bot. And actually they can do the job at a level as good for the customer as the agent can, which frees up staff, frees up resources, and allows some investment to be made elsewhere and gives people a more rewarding job to do as well.
And I know, again, on the workforce episode, we talked about the future control room. What does that look like, that point of contact coming in, how it could be done differently as well. So one of the things we touched on already, and it's really, really important, and Gavin, you touched on at the start of the very first episode about you can't police without confidence. And one of the key things that's come through in all the episodes is around that issue for the public being alarmed by what they're hearing around artificial intelligence, the growing cyber-enabled crime, and importantly, the clear message about, yeah, you need to be aware of it, you shouldn't be alarmed by it. But importantly, as we step forward with new technology, new ways of working, taking the public with us is really, really important. So I don't know, Gavin, if you want to share with listeners some of the work that you're doing already around that space and where you think there might be some gaps and more we need to do across society as well.
Yeah, and the other thing I'd say is that in many of these areas, communities are already ahead of us. They already know that they're much more likely to be a victim of an online offence than they are coming to harm walking down the street. And of course, with what we do with children and young people is trying to impress on them that you're at risk online as much as you are when you're out in your local town and village with your mates. So it's not just about us taking people with us, it's us keeping up with where society is. Key part of that is just the dialogue to keep this conversation going, and series like this podcast really help. The other thing is, what's the regulatory framework around this? I mean, looking ahead into the future, we're going to have offences on the statute books that we can't even imagine now, and there's going to need to be duties on everybody to think about how their new technologies can be exploited for ill by criminals and terrorists and so on. So, the legal and regulatory framework is going to need to be different in future, and of course that needs a public debate to get it right. And then I suppose connecting all of them is to recognise that policing is a service that is by the public, for the public. And increasingly, we're going to need a much broader range of skills into policing. So even if today you can't see yourself as a police officer or a police staff, as a police volunteer, in the years to come, this might be exactly the place for you, because there's just going to be a much broader range of skills and abilities that we're going to need in policing to keep people safe. So I think ultimately it should become a more inclusive service in the years and decades ahead.
Yeah, and as well known, it's over history shown us, police are the public are the police, aren't they?
Exactly that. And we're going to need all the help that we can get to keep pace. So if this is an area that interests you, then, maybe start and think now about into policing.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. That's a good plug. So Tony, in terms of, you touched on it about the importance of taking time out to leapfrog, as Gavin touched on, leapfrog to the future piece. Clearly, as you've highlighted before, policing can't do this on its own. The partners, wider partners, wider criminal justice, wider private, public and other sectors can help. Give us a view at the moment for listeners about what can be done in that space at the moment, how working with partners could be different.
Well, in the 2030 digital strategy, there's one of the key themes is working with industry, working in partnership with industry. And it's quite clear, maybe even sort of 5 years ago, police forces were looking to do sort of minor development themselves, to have small systems and do things themselves. And it's recognising is, that the cost and the complexity of technology, there are great quality suppliers out there that have got good products that we can harness, and we've really got to work in partnership and harness the best of what industry got to offer and work with industry, because we cannot, as a service, we're good at policing, we're not producers of technology, we're not the experts in data. So we've got to develop that partnership, and we really, as a service, we really prize those suppliers we work with. And interestingly, as representatives of our public, their commitment to public service and public safety is commendable. So there is this kind of thing that they're in business to make money, but the kind of buy into the mission, because they're all people that live in our communities, they've all got families, they've all got children at school, they've all got the same worries that we all have around living in a safe society. They want to have a thriving business. It's got to be a crime-free society in the main for them to run a business. So I think there's a real joint enterprise with industry that we need to build upon. And I think flexibilities that are coming in around procurement, et cetera, about saying is how do we create an opportunity where we can reduce the cost of trade? So companies can concentrate and do what they do well, and we can concentrate on policing, and we spend less time going through commercial exercises and try and form those sorts of partnerships that say we've got some long-term skin in the game, policing and industry. And that helps the public. And the other thing we can do is kind of be more transparent about what we're doing. So we hold large amounts of data. If we can make that data nationally available and share it with partners, we can give insights to health and social care that enable them to make interventions in preventative activities that actually mean that you don't get the problem. I saw a great app a number of years ago where when there's heavy snowfall, when people are vulnerable, need help, it goes on an app and you can, the neighbours come around and clear the drive from snow. It's an American city, which is the knowledge around community safety and the data we have is not just for us. So can we democratise that? Can we share more understanding about what's happening in crime and things and enable people to protect themselves and their communities? So I think there's lots more we can do if we think more imaginatively in the future about how we police. And as Gavin will say, how do we become more legitimate? How do we sort of, you know, work with the public rather than deliver policing to them?
Yeah, and a note on the artificial intelligence and the cyber and surveillance episodes, we talked again around that corporate responsibility to play their part now in terms of preventing some of these taking place. Again, as you touched on there, those organisations are part of our community, aren't they? And the reality is their employers are part of that, our community at the same time. So if we get them on board now and playing their part, actually can help prevent, reduce the risk of them being a victim in the future as well.
Yeah, I think just on that, Jason, as well, the other collective responsibility that we're all going to have, whether we're in public or private sector or voluntary and community, is the environmental challenge that we all face. Yeah. And I've absolutely no doubt that there will be criminals seeking to exploit opportunities around what's happening to the planet and natural resources and utilities and the protection of our natural environment. And we've all got a shared interest in that because we need a planet to live on. That's going to become very real very soon, I think. And if you talk to colleagues at Interpol, some of those sort of global crime challenges they're seeing now.
And again, we touched on some of that around the cyber episode, around the hostile threat from outside the UK and wider international. And I think you touched on it, Gavin, on the very first episode about international cooperation to actually deal with some of these issues. Okay, obviously, elephant in the room is around finance. Tony, really important point. This is not about continuing to invest in things that we know that ultimately have not got any more legs. It's about investing in things that's going to make a real difference. But Gavin, in terms of finance, it's a real pressure. I know your daily responsibilities, the conversations with Home Office, wider government about finance. What sort of things can be done in policing to improve the financial challenge?
In a way, this links to what the point I was making about leapfrogging, because currently we can't afford the system that we've got because there's too much duplication in the system. There's too many people trying to spend money on the same things. So reform of the system is absolutely necessary in order to get the best from the money that the public entrusts us to have. The second thing I think is, it links to the data point, is to understand our worth. And I think in the years ahead, we will be able to demonstrate the value of safety and security, of good quality policing to economic growth and to community well-being. And I think when we can make those connections to growth and to well-being, that will be a different conversation than with those who hold the purse strings. And, you know, in the UK context, the Treasury, but around the globe, I think recognising that need for safety and security will help us make the arguments in a stronger way than we currently do.
And Alan, in terms of looking out, again, out from outside policing in, and again, as Tony's touched on, the importance of working with private sector and other sectors as well, where do you see some of the opportunities for policing and what's stopping some of that now?
Getting a team together when there's an idea to be solved that can work out how it can make it happen. So often it is, not just in policing, I think in industry as well, you'll have a pioneer that wants to do something and they'll bang their head against many different walls in order to get there. You actually need to get them to encourage the finance person to say, how do we actually make this work? The operational person, how do we make this work? The procurement person, how do we make this work? And I don't think that's a problem particular to policing. I think it's general. And it is about cooperating. So, you know, we talk a lot about cooperating maybe between forces or with industry. I think the initial thing is cooperate with the people that need to get things together to make it happen, and then try to grow it out from there. And I think with Tony's talked about there, with the data, police data is very precious, and we need to, when we're doing experiments, we need to be able to look at that with test data and development data and do a small piece of work out if it's a good thing. If it's not, stop it. But if it's a good thing, take it to the next level and the next level and gradually build it up, because you're not going to change it from 80% spent in the transactions to 60% overnight. It's going to go down 1% or 2% every time. So I think that's the kind of growth piece. I think the other piece is if you start to bring things together, you've got to do it to get the money to make as an investment, not to save it and not get it back. Because you can easily put two things together and save the money, but if you don't get it, make an investment, you're not making things any better. Yeah. So you actually got to continue to work that piece as well, which is probably done at all different levels. And I think that's not just, you know, I keep saying it's not just policing. People do a merger and integration with private companies. They do it to get some money out, but they do it to get further money to invest out of it as well.
And that's the key bit, isn't it, from the conversation today, has been about that need to invest, but localise what we've already got as well to make that space. Okay, conscious of time, we're coming up towards the end of this final episode. So I'm on the spot now for our policing guests. I'm not going to put on the spot today around this, but for our policing guests, clear this podcast has been about future. It's been about 2045. So I'm going to start with you, Gavin. In a few lines, what do you think policing will look like, feel like in 2045?
I think it'll be much more preventative and much more predictive in what we do because we will understand more. I think we'll be able to model through big policy changes. So instead of trying something out and guessing whether it's going to work, I think we'll be able to model whether there's a high chance of it working or not. So hopefully it will be smarter, more considerate. And the one thing that will definitely still be there today is that it's fundamentally a human endeavour and we need to keep connecting with people in the same way that we do today.
Okay, thank you. Tony?
So I think in the future we will have harnessed our data in a way that we know which bits of information actually help us in our mission. So I think we're going to get a really close alignment between what the public want from us and need from us, what you need to know to do that. And as Gavin says, what we'll have is a whole series of capabilities that enable us to do that really, really well. I think that the perennial problem will be that criminals will always be on the same mission. They will be looking at the same opportunity. What data, what tools can they use to frustrate the controls that society puts on? So I don't think we're going to get to a point where there's a happy ending and there's no crime. I think we're in that thing where we need to competitively work with our communities and our partners to take things forward. But I kind of guess we would hope in 2045 to have made the right decisions and the right choices that mean that instead of perhaps lagging behind technology and things, that we perhaps are on a par. The real thing is, how do we get on the par so as technology changes, we've got the capacity to see it coming, to absorb it, to reflect. So the lag between criminality such as phishing and our ability to prevent and interdict it, is that time is shortened so that our responses are the dynamic. The bit that gets confidence is people can forgive the police, I think, for a new crime occurring that wasn't foreseen. But what they kind of lose confidence in is it takes us too long to respond and to kind of control it. So I think for me, can we get to the point where our technology and our data enables us to be really precise and really responsive to the public's needs, recognising that we won't remove crime and disorder from society.
Yeah. So I suppose the key bit is this conversation loads up to the cloud and we are wherever we are in 2045, we can look back and say, were we right? What's the bits we got right? What the bits we got wrong? And ultimately, where's the difference, isn't it? So firstly, a massive thank you to you three today for your involvement. I'm really grateful for you being involved in the podcast throughout. So really, really grateful. Your insights have been really helpful in terms of generating the conversation. Also, a massive thank you to the other guest that's been with me on this little journey. Some of the key takeaways from the series, ultimately, is about firstly, predicting the future is fraught with challenge and uncertainty. We know that. Importantly for policing, it's not standing still. It's recognising it needs to be doing things now for the future, which is really important. The volume of data available is going to help us if we use it right. Good quality data will help us to identify future victims, future offenders, and will keep our community safer. We just need to make sure we maximise that opportunity. Artificial intelligence will play a significant role in policing, but importantly, you've touched on it, Gavin, human judgment, interaction will still be crucial, particularly where we know we've got some very vulnerable victims, future vulnerable victims at the same time. Technology, really important, but it must be connected to the people and the people influencing in terms of that capability for the future as well. And lastly, public trust in technology, the way we're operating technology, using the technology, again, will be important. And as we've touched on today, is about taking them on that journey and ideally getting ahead of those individuals so we can actually shape that at the same time. So a massive thank you to Exception for sponsoring this series. Again, listeners can subscribe to any of the platforms for the podcast. For the final time in this series, thank you very much for listening.
Thin Digital Line, policing in the year 2045.